Welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past the hour following the latest news, Kirk Heinze hosts from the Michigan's Drive Toward Autonomous Vehicles Forum, put on by MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research.
Autonomous and connected vehicles will likely be road ready before laws and regulations will be in place to support this new mobility world. At least, according to one of the experts at a recent Autonomous Vehicle Forum hosted by Michigan State University. This week, we'll hear from several experts on what we need to do to get ready for driverless and connected cars.
MSU Today begins at 4:06. WKAR.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Tune to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Russ and I are on site at an autonomous vehicle forum in downtown Lansing. The forum is one of the 2017 Public Policy Forum series organized and hosted by the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University, also known as IPSR. Dr. Matt Grossman, Director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University, is our first guest. Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on the show and to join you at the Autonomous Vehicle Forum.
Thanks for being here.
Tell our audience a little bit about IPSR.
Well, our mission is to inform state public policy and improve governance in Michigan. And this is part of our public forum series that we do every year on hot topics in the state legislature. And it's part of our broader mission to connect the university with the Capitol downtown.
One thing you do, public policy education and training programs. I'm familiar with your Michigan Political Leadership Program. Know a lot of people who have been through that. You just announced a new class.
We did. We're very proud. We have 11 members of the current state legislature, including three that were just elected, who are alums of the program. And I can tell you we're going to have more in the future because we have a great new class of young people excited to be participating in politics.
Well, the forum is autonomous vehicles. It's been much in the news. Why did you decide to make that one of your featured fora for 2017?
Well, we certainly like to do the hot topics that are kind of everyone needs more information about, and especially the ones where the university has something to add to the public conversation. And that's certainly true here, where we'll be able to hear directly from researchers in the field. It's also nice to have sort of a good news topic. A lot of the policy issues that we cover about solving problems, and that's, of course, the important function of state government. But that often means that we're talking about difficulties that different parts of the state are having. And so it's nice to have a topic where we're looking to the future and looking at something that's maybe some exciting potential for the state rather than necessarily a problem.
Well, we're reading a lot about the technological dimensions of autonomous vehicles, not quite as much on the public policy side and what it means to municipalities, insurance, and what have you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the focus today is going to be to cover the broader perspective of autonomous vehicles, but especially from a public policy perspective.
Yes. I mean, we will have a mix of people just telling us the basics of the technology and how it's evolving, and that's necessary for even getting the basic view of what kinds of policy choices are going to be up to the state. But this is an area where the state is already moving ahead, has already passed some policies to allow autonomous vehicles to operate on Michigan roadways. And so it's also an important time to kind of step back and say, what are we getting ourselves into? What kinds of issues might arise that we'll have to address in the future.
Now, IPSR does an awful lot of survey research as well, and I've been fortunate enough to work with your people in the past, in a past life. But from discussions like this, then I would imagine some research projects would evolve that would affect you directly.
So we are certainly going to be involved. We have some proposals to do some public opinion research related to this issue because it is going to be important. People have safety concerns. People have some economic concerns about drivers and truckers and other kinds of industries that might be affected by autonomous vehicles. And so we have to learn what are the public's concerns, what are their aspirations in order to address this policy issue.
Well, this whole autonomous vehicle thing, I mean, it, for the most part, what I've read is there's a lot of room here for optimism. This could create major economic development possibilities in the state of Michigan and across the country. I mean, in general, Matt, what's your take on autonomous vehicles?
Well, it's very nice to be at the sort of the technological forefront. We're used to hearing Michigan talked about as the industries of the past. And now we are at the very center of the major technological innovation of our time. And you can see it because all of the Silicon Valley companies are coming here to Michigan to try to be involved in the future of the automotive industry. So I think in general, it's a very, very important shows a lot of potential for the Michigan economy of the future. That doesn't mean that there won't be problems to resolve along the way.
Well, Matt, we're looking forward. We're going to be talking to several of your panelists, including lawyers, people who work for the Michigan Department of Transportation. But you've got an excellent lineup, and we really appreciate the hospitality today and the fact that you've invited us to be here.
Well, thank you. Yes, we always try to bring in some researchers and some practitioners so that we can meld together the knowledge that comes from the university and from the people who are on the ground making and implementing policy.
Matt, I also understand we've got a few seconds left here, but you've got a new book out. Give us a snapshot of the book. I'll get a chance to give it a little plug.
Well, the new book's called Asymmetric Politics, and it's about differences between Democrats and Republicans. So that's a hot topic now. The approach that we try to say is what can each political party learn from each other? They each have strengths and weaknesses. The Republicans have successfully sold a broad vision about the role of government in society to the American public. The Democrats have kind of cobbled together a coalition of a lot of different social groups with particular policy concerns. So each party has a potential majority in the American public, but they gain it through very different means.
And the name of the book?
Asymmetric Politics.
Asymmetric Politics by Dr. Matt Grossman, who is the director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. They're also hosting the Autonomous Vehicle Forum in downtown Lansing as part of the 2017 Public Policy Forum series that is organized and hosted by IPSR. Matt, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you. We appreciate being here.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Well, one of the panelists today at the Autonomous Vehicle Forum is Dr. Hader Rhoda, who's a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Michigan State University. He's also the director of CANVAS, C-A-N-V-A-S. The Connected and Autonomous Network Vehicles for Active Safety. Dr. Rhoda, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I want to follow up on some of your discussions, some of your comments during the panel discussion. And the first one is the distinction between autonomous and connected when we talk about these vehicles.
So, as you mentioned, there are really two type of technologies we're trying to develop. So one of them is autonomous driving. And under autonomous driving, basically the vehicle will be equipped with, sensors. These sensors literally act like the human eye, looking around, basically trying to recognize what's the surrounding and the environment around the vehicle. And also an autonomous driving vehicle will also be equipped with a computer, which basically acts as the brain in terms of making decisions, where to go around. So far, by having this combination of sensing devices and a computer on the vehicle, that makes it an autonomous vehicle. And that vehicle is not necessarily connected or it's not talking with other vehicle. If the vehicle starts talking with other vehicle, then we talk about connectivity. And that sometimes is referred to V2V, which stands for vehicle-to-vehicle communication, and also V2I, which stands for vehicle-to-infrastructure communication. So you could actually have vehicles that only do communication. They just talk with each other, or they talk with the infrastructure. In that case, you have only a connected vehicle, but it's not, it's not equipped, for example, with the sensor that an autonomous vehicle would have. So you have these two different flavors.
So when you put these concepts of autonomous and connected together, those are two pillars for what we're talking about with respect to this mobility word.
So these two technologies, to some degree, they are being developed really independently of each other right now. There are very few companies, very few universities trying to bring them together. I would like to attest that MSU actually is one of the universities that are bringing both autonomous and connected vehicles. As you see from our Canvas program, we start with C, which stands for connected, and then the second letter is autonomous. So we're bringing actually both those technologies together. Now, when you bring them together, we believe is going to enable a whole new host of mobility services that is much more powerful than having either technology operating on its own.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question. Specifically now, let's drill down to the driver, to the consumer. The advantages to a driver or a pedestrian when you link autonomy and connectivity?
As far as the driver, we could envision a time when you could, you know, drive from Detroit to Chicago and you are completely productive in terms of or enjoying yourself, you know, through entertainment, watching TV. It's almost like you're sitting in your living room, right? Now, that's a much more enjoyable ride, right, of 5 to 6 hours, depending on traffic. Hopefully the traffic will be better when we have autonomous driving. That's another advantage. But in that context, you could see the impact on the occupants inside the vehicle. Now, when you start to look at outside the vehicle, we believe pedestrians will be significantly safer with autonomous driving. You know, the vehicles will be equipped with very high-tech, 360-degree eyes, if you will, that's rotating all the time. You know, in fact, every second, the eye will be rotating, I could give you some numbers, around 30 times a second, right? So, in fact, even more than that, I'm just giving a number just to give you an idea. And, you know, that kind of capability, you know, sometimes we refer to it as superhuman, because we human cannot do that. So the pedestrians will be safer, other vehicles will be safer, and also the occupants will enjoy the ride significantly more.
You mentioned the fact that there may be fewer vehicles on the road, and the nature of this program is to look at environmental issues. But are there some major environmental considerations with autonomous and connected vehicles that we need to take into account, that we need to know about, that will be beneficial from a sustainability standpoint?
This is going to be kind of a chain of events that will literally put us in a much better position in terms of being green. And I'm not mean green in terms of Michigan State, but I mean green in terms of, you know, being sustainable, you know, from energy point of view. So in that kind of, so what's going to happen, we really believe that enabling autonomous driving and connected driving will save fuel significantly because of the concept of platooning, where vehicles actually will be following each other, minimizing congestion. You don't even have to stop at an intersection anymore. You optimize that, minimizing stoppage at intersection right now. That itself could be significant, and will have significant impact on saving, you know, green gas effect, for example. You know, those kind of stuff will really become, will enable a green environment significantly more than what we have today.
We're talking autonomous and connected vehicles with Dr. Hader Rota, who is a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Michigan State University. You mentioned in your remarks some of the challenges that are facing the development of these vehicles right now. For our listeners, what are two or three of the major challenges?
Literally, we're trying to teach a child how to drive. And this is really the major obstacle in terms of enabling autonomous driving. I always give this example. You know, we human actually, despite all the negative things sometimes people talk about in terms of not being safe and, you know, causing accidents and so on, but we are really incredible beings in terms of recognition. We recognize things around us extremely well. Now, getting to the point where making the autonomous vehicle capable of recognizing all the different objects that we, throughout our life, learn how to recognize, that itself, distinguishing between a pedestrian and a vehicle. I give you one very, really key example. When we drive on the road, and if I am driving and I see a pedestrian walking on the sidewalk, if that pedestrian happens to be an adult, then, I would know that the adult will be continuing in its path and I feel safe continuing in my driving. However, imagine if I start to recognize that pedestrian is a child, maybe a five-year-old child that is walking by him or herself. Then me as a human being, I recognize that. I became aware of it. I become more careful the way I drive. That type of recognition is one of the most challenging things to bring an autonomous driving toward. And that's really part of the challenges under the area we call it artificial intelligence.
A lot of folks are doing research in the whole area of autonomous connectivity, mobility. Michigan State has got its niche. Are different universities and different partners collaborating or communicating with each other so there's not a lot of duplication of effort?
We are in discussions, obviously, with other, with companies, with the University of Michigan. We have colleagues there that we talk with. At the same time, I would like to highlight that MSU, literally for decades, have been developing really world-class technologies that at the core of autonomous driving. These areas include artificial intelligence, computer vision, in the radar area. MSU for decades have one of the strongest programs in the nation. So really it did not take us a long time to recognize that MSU as an example to actually start to play a major role in this area. And we see how we complement actually other activities going on in University of Michigan as a key example, of course, and in industry. So we're talking with Ford, with GM, with all the, big players, with tier one companies. So we're trying to basically make sure that actually we work on research problems, not duplicating what they're doing.
Well, we could talk about this forever. This is such a fascinating area of research. I've been talking with Dr. Haider Rada, a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Michigan State. He's also the director of Canvas, the Connected and Autonomous Network Vehicles for Active Safety. As developments emerge with your graduate students and your colleagues, we'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I could promise you that.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Well, another panelist at the Autonomous Vehicle Forum hosted by the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State is Matt Smith. Matt is the Intelligent Transportation Systems Program Administrator for the Michigan Department of Transportation. Matt, great remarks today during the forum, and thank you for coming on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Oh, you're welcome. No problem. It's been a great couple hours here.
You focused on the panel, which I thought was spot on, the role of the Michigan Department of Transportation in this whole area of autonomous and connected vehicles. Give our readers a snapshot of that role.
Sure. Well, essentially our role in fostering and encouraging this technology and investing in this technology is our core mission, which is to get people safely from point A to point B. Same reason why we have roads, same reason why we have bridges, the same reason why we see this technology as being very important for our future.
Now, you made it a point. You folks are not necessarily into the R&D and the technology development, but what are some of the specific things that you can provide to all the partners in this playing in the field?
Absolutely. We're not designing building sensors or vehicles or anything on those lines. But we are doing things like the ability to get some of our traffic signal information broadcast into the vehicle. So applications running on board the vehicles can start either providing warnings to drivers or engaging other systems on board the vehicles to prevent crashes from happening at red lights. We're working on the ability to broadcast some real-time work zone information, lane closure information into the vehicle also, so we could start broadcasting warnings or to the drivers on when there might be lane closures or backups due to lane closures or if there are safety concerns related to those work zones. And same thing with weather, getting information on hey, is there a black ice spot 1,100 feet ahead and let's get that information broadcast into the vehicle. That's what we're working on, is providing that information into the vehicle so our vehicle partners and technology partners can take that information and develop applications that your drivers can use.
Now, this isn't entirely a whole brave new world. I mean, I can go online now, and I can look for traffic closures. I can get weather and those sorts of things. So you really are expanding and in some ways making more sophisticated what you already do.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're taking – right now we do a good job of getting out information, but it's more general. We can – say, hey, there's road work going on between these two exits on a freeway. What we want to be able to say is give warnings to drivers saying your lane is going to be gone. It's going to be closed 800 feet ahead. You have to get over. That's the type of information we want to be able to get to.
Now, Matt, one of the challenges, and I don't need to tell you this, but you also have the work that the Michigan Department of Transportation has to do day in and day out with existing infrastructure, and yet then you've got to be looking out, 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. That's got to be a resource management issue in some regards.
It always is. This is new technology that we believe is going to drastically impact safety, but we still have to be sure we have a usable transportation network out there. We still have to be able to account for roads and bridges and make sure they're in good repair. And unfortunately, it's not like there's a new funding source that's going to enable us, that's magically going to open up and enable us to fund these new technology solutions. So we're going to have to continuously evaluate where it makes where we're going to get the greatest rate of return on our investments. So when we have the ability to drastically improve safety, generally we're going to have a large return on investment. So we have to start weighing out those priorities as we move forward.
Well, you said it earlier, but I think it's worth reiterating. I mean, safety, safety, safety. I mean, that undergirds everything that you're looking at.
That's why we're here. We want our drivers to get from one place to the other and safe doing it. And without safe roads, we're not going to get anywhere. We're still, unfortunately, having 1,000 people a year dying on roadways in Michigan, despite improvements to pavement and bridges and vehicle safety. We need to look to something like this technology in order to get that fatality rate on a downward trend again.
My guest is Matt Smith. He's the Intelligent Transportation Systems Program Administrator for the Michigan Department of Transportation. He was also a panelist at the Autonomous Vehicle Forum held recently held in downtown Lansing. Matt, you mentioned a number of different initiatives that you're involved in specifically. A couple of them we've talked about briefly on this show, but a little bit about the American Center for Mobility down at Willow Run and your role in that collaboration.
But the American Center for Mobility is a great initiative that is well on its way to becoming a reality. It's 300-plus acres of land at the old General Motors Willow Run plant down in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And this facility will allow for the testing and the validation of this connected and automated vehicle technology as it becomes developed and matures and becomes in the marketplace. It will have a wide variety of environments. It'll have a high-speed 2.5-mile freeway loop. It'll have urban environments, rural environments, suburban environments, all different environments that this technology needs to be proven out against. So at Michigan Department of Transportation, we're not the ones running the American Center for Mobility. That's not a MDOT or a facility, but we're obviously very supportive of the end result of what this technology is going to do. So anything we can do to help support the development of the center, we are working very closely with ACM on converting some of the or permitting some of the use of Michigan Avenue right there that fronts the plant for use in their testing and validation. We're helping provide some use cases that we'd like to see from the infrastructure side worked on and tested out as everything moves forward. So we work very closely with ACM staff, keeping them apprised in alignment with what we're doing at MDOT so we can benefit from whatever happens there at the center.
Another partnership you spoke to that was very interesting during the panel discussion was the work you're doing with the United States Army.
Yes, the U.S. Army's Automotive Research Development the majority of it happens right here in Michigan. And there's a lot of technology, connected and automated vehicle technology, that actually has already been developed and proven out in the military. There's a lot of opportunity to bring that technology into the civilian world where everybody can benefit from it. And that's not just kind of a benefit from an economic benefit standpoint. The U.S. Army and others, they have a vested interest to make sure this technology comes to fruition on public roadways. So we're working, we've worked very closely with them on being able to deploy and test out some truck and vehicle platooning technologies that where commercial vehicles can travel very closely together with fuel savings, safety savings, and that's huge to them. It's huge to other commercial vehicle operators, and it's big to us to we see a great improvement in commercial vehicle safety with the adoption of this type of technology.
And you mentioned truck platooning, and in so many cases, things that start in the military and then have application to civilian life, but truck platooning could have applications for the way our trucks are driven, irrespective of military platooning.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where even the Army sees their benefit. They have such a cost in logistics, just shipping things through commercial carriers across the country. They see the economic benefit from it. And then across the country, any large fleet operator that can see a 3-10% savings on fuel, if you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year on fuel, is a huge economic improvement. If we can see from a safety aspect a reduction in commercial vehicle related crashes, again, that's going to be huge. The Army's going to see benefits. We're going to see benefits as society. Other commercial fleet operators are going to see benefits from this as the technology gets adopted.
Matt, last question here. We've covered the 21st Century Infrastructure Task Force report that just came out. Yes. We know how busy MDOT's going to be with all of that. But in terms specifically of autonomous and connected vehicles, what are two or three things over the next year that you folks are going to be focusing on?
Hands down, the big thing we're going to we want to focus on is providing an environment that allows our automotive sector partners to develop and deploy this technology. That was huge with the support we were able to provide for the development of the legislation, sponsored by Senator Colwell and others. So continuing to foster that environment is going to be very important for us. We're also going to continue to work with our automotive partners on the develop of vehicle infrastructure applications, the red light violation warning applications, which we're already able to demonstrate functional in a functional real world environment, be able to expand upon that and hopefully have a wider scale deployment of that technology. So we're going to have continued work on that automated or those VDI application development. And I think you're going to probably see as we upgrade some of our traffic signal systems, especially in the Southeast Michigan area, it's going to provide a great opportunity where we can start maybe implementing some of this technology at a very small incremental cost to existing projects. So we start having some corridors in the state of Michigan that can take advantage of this new technology as it comes to market.
Well, Matt, as some of these initiatives come to fruition, love to have you back on the program to talk about them. I mean, this is a fascinating area. Every panelist agreed that these are great opportunities, not only for Michigan, but for the United States in general. So it's a pleasure having you on the program. I've been talking with Matt Smith, the Intelligent Transportation Systems Program Administrator for the Michigan Department of Transportation. Matt, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for your time, too. It's been a pleasure.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Another participant on the panel in the Autonomous Vehicle Forum is Elena Farnsworth. She is the CEO of Mobile Comply and Director of Global Communications for the Connected Vehicle Trade Association. Elena, pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You focused your remarks on an area that it's not often covered in discussions about autonomous and connected vehicles, and that's this whole area of, guess what, workforce development. A little bit of a reiteration of what you just told the audience, and why is workforce development so important?
So never before have we really seen a convergence of so many technologies in intelligent transportation. So we're seeing a very high skill set of workers with engineering and computer science background, but they're beginning to intertwine, because when you have connectivity and autonomy, you need to be able to support the engineering side and the technology side, and as you heard today, the cybersecurity side. There's a lot of different avenues that need to be combined in order to get the right product.
One of the things we heard today from you and some other panelists is changing the notion, at least at the collegiate level, of what do we mean by civil engineering or training engineers for this particular dimension?
Yes, the industry is quite complex because you are dealing with the in-vehicle technologies with autonomy, but you're also dealing with connectivity. So you're also dealing with infrastructure, which is the civil engineering side. And I, for years, have played a role at a national level in discussing how are these people getting the education to date. And for a very long time, it was through just simply reading themselves or by osmosis. They're in an area where they have been thrust into this connected or autonomous vehicle role, and they've had to learn by doing. But that's no longer going to be okay. It's going to have to be a thoughtful design by education institutions, and they're going to have to collaborate. We need to be able to work together in a way so that we can graduate students for jobs that don't even exist yet. So there's a lot of work to be done, but it has to be done quickly.
What do colleges of engineering, I mean, put your visionary hat on, I mean, what do they need to begin doing in terms of curriculum to make some of these things happen that you're talking about?
Well, the good news is this. Many of the universities, especially here in Michigan, have a great grasp on what we need. And what we need to do, I believe, because we do know that education moves rather slowly, but we need to identify what those programs are that are currently in existence. The University of Michigan and Michigan State and Kettering, they've all got great programs, and I'm missing hundreds of other colleges that are doing great things. We need to identify that core competency. This is an engineering degree that would be good for the engineering side. This is a technology degree or a science degree that would have the good foundation for autonomous and connected. And then we need to layer on top of that programs for professional development, like certifications or things that would allow them to say, I have a master's degree in, let's just say, mechanical engineering with a specialty certification in cyber or connected or autonomous vehicle. And that's a way that we can get there faster, but it's got to be a partnership.
Well, let's look more broadly now at the educational system in this mobility world that we're talking about. What about the role of community colleges, trade schools, even high schools in preparing a workforce for this future world?
Well, we've also, again, I can't commend Michigan enough because I see a lot across the nation. And I will say there are programs that are going on right now where they're taking projects into the high schools and they're taking challenges from SAE and a local nonprofit called Square One that we work often with. And they're going into the elementary level. And they're going into the middle school and high school level, and they're showing them through project-based learning what it's like to build these devices. The students are actually building kit cars that they print off of 3D printers from Square One, and they're programming them in Raspberry Pi, and they're saying, let's make these cars talk to the infrastructure. Now, the students aren't the one that has trouble with this. The teachers are the ones that have to be prepared, and we have to allow them to have these technologies and understand that it's even available, and then the students just take it away.
Related to sort of tangentially this idea of workforce development, we have driver force development that we have to think about too. A lot of us got our driver's training in high school or through an independent contractor. Then you take a test at the sheriff's office, you get your driver's license. We're going to have parallel systems going on here. I mean, what's going to happen in terms of drivers training and preparing people to either drive or ride in these autonomous vehicles?
When we start looking at levels of autonomy and we start looking at the different parallels of the connected cars that will be driven, the autonomous cars that will be driven, and then the driver level one or zero autonomous, which is, you know, the very driver-operated vehicles, at a level four is where a typical airplane on the NHTSA scale would operate today. And if you look at this, you don't just get into an airplane, as we discussed earlier, and just hit the gas. There's a lot of training that must occur. So what I suspect is as as this evolves, we will need to make sure that we pay attention to a different level of training. So you may be able to, for instance, be able to operate a car at a level one or two, but you may not be able to operate it at a three or four, or vice versa. If you're an elderly, for instance, that has vision trouble, I would suspect, again, that you would be able to operate at a level four because the automobile will do most of the driving, whereas you would not be able to do a level one. So although those have not been worked out, and I certainly can't speak for the Department of Motor Vehicles, what I would say is that there will need to be an evolution of practice in order to be able to be a safer environment.
We're talking about autonomous and connected vehicles with Elena Farnsworth. She is the CEO of Mobile Comply. You're also an expert on this in this area of cybersecurity and these autonomous vehicles. I mean, what are some of the key challenges that we're facing right now with respect to cybersecurity, and where do we need to go?
If you look at how a traditional, let's just say, for instance, CAN bus is designed, there are challenges that you will have that you face in the world of cyber. There are a lot of great research that's being done, and there are standards. I believe, as we mentioned earlier, the automotive ISAC, it's specifically designed to be able to have the automotive industry come together to collaborate on these cyber-sensitive issues. We happen to know that there's a lot of really good initiatives that are going through the military because it is not something that is forgotten, and we are able to use best practice to secure vehicles. But again, it will evolve, as does time, because of the complexity of the technologies that are converging at once.
Wow, there's so much to think about. I mean, this panel discussion was just mind-boggling today, and you've done any number of these. Elena, for people who want more information on workforce development, cybersecurity, areas related to this autonomous and connected vehicle world, I mean, what are some good places to go?
There are a lot of resources that are out there. The colleges and a lot of the universities here in Michigan have wonderful research that they've published on the projects that they are doing. Our state, Michigan Department of Transportation, also puts out a lot of information about some of the really innovative projects that we have going on the infrastructure side here in Michigan. Obviously, you can come to mobilecomply.com, where we publish white papers about why it's important to educate the future and why it's important to educate the current workforce. So with all of those resources that are out there, there's a lot that can be learned just from being able to access that.
Elena, the last thing, too, you concluded your remarks today, and some of the other panelists did, too, with from 50,000 feet. What is all this going to mean for the state of Michigan and beyond?
I can't stress enough the number of jobs that are going to be created because of this new economy is just mind-boggling. It's also such an exciting time because, as many of us said today, never before, since the inception of the automobile, have we really seen such a change in the way that we live, the way that we drive, and the way we get from point A to point B much safer and much better.
I've been talking with Elena Farnsworth. She's the CEO of Mobile Comply and also the Director of Global Communications for the Connected Vehicle Trade Association. Elena, thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment inside MSU Today here on AM 870 WKAR. To read Kirk's blog and hear more Greening of the Great Lakes content, visit mlive.com/environment. Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Well, last summer, Russ and I attended the Governor's Energy Excellence Awards ceremony at the Michigan State University Wharton Center, and we had the opportunity to interview several award winners. Well, the 2017 competition is underway, and here to give us the details is Mary Templeton. Mary is the Executive Director of Michigan Saves and Chair of the Award Steering Committee. Mary, great to see you again.
Good to see you again. Thanks, Kirk.
We had such a great time last year. I think we got two shows out of the award winners. I mean, it was amazing, the entrepreneurial spirit in Michigan. But you're underway again this year.
We are. This is our third annual Governor's Energy Excellence Award, and we are so excited to be able to host this again. This is an opportunity for somebody who is committed to reducing energy waste to get highlighted. We know there are so many different projects going around, so many different homeowners and businesses and churches and schools and contractors that are doing really, really effective work at reducing energy waste in our state. And this awards ceremony takes the highest level of our state and acknowledges the work that they do. We think it's really, really important because these people can be examples to other people who are doing really good work.
Well, give our listeners an idea of what the different categories are, because I know you have several categories you recognize.
We do. We have eight different categories. And we usually recognize three finalists in each one of those categories. There are three that are kind of high-level categories. There's one that's an innovator of the year. That's presented to somebody who's doing something really innovative or creative. It could be a person, an organization, a program, or a company. Another one is a contractor of the year. So these are the contractors. These are the people that are doing work in people's homes and doing work in people's businesses, schools. Another is best communication, education, or program. This is something that is presented to an organization that's overcome that barrier of communicating the benefits of energy efficiency. They've maybe developed really effective communication tools or marketing campaigns. I think last year we awarded someone who was doing work in schools, educating schools about energy efficiency and stopping energy waste. And then we have five categories that recognize best projects. Now, one thing to mention about these project categories, the work must have been completed in 2016. Yes. So that's a qualifier that's really important that people need to recognize. So the different projects we have a residential project. Everybody lives in a home. If you've done really good energy efficiency work, highlight it. This is your chance to attend a really fun yet intimate acknowledgement and celebration that includes the governor and all kinds of other resources. And you get, a nice award. You get to attend the event. It's a beautiful lunch. Really, really a nice opportunity to get recognized.
Well, I can vouch for that from personal experience. You mentioned the Innovator of the Year Award. I've got to tell a quick personal story, but last year it was Tara Caloric out of Alpena, Michigan, geothermal units in your home. Well, I have one installed in my home, and it was a direct result of the interview we did at the awards ceremony last year.
That is excellent. That's exactly the kind of thing that this award ceremony is intended to do. It's to recognize those really important things going on and then have people like you, Kirk, take advantage of it and then just continue the momentum of reducing energy waste in our state.
Well, as I remember from last year, the range was amazing. You had a casino resort, Odawa, I think, all the way to Habitat for Humanity in Kent County. I mean, it's quite, and a couple of very large companies as well.
Yeah, we did. We had a huge, huge range. And let me continue on those best projects.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I mentioned residential. We also have commercials. So those are private entities. I think, just a business, a restaurant, somebody, maybe a church or any kind of commercial entity. We also have a best projects in the public category. So that's a public sector entity. It might be a school. It might be a fire station or your municipality who's done some really good work. We have industrial manufacturing. So, for example, Cargill in St. Clair won last year. They did some really creative work. They replaced a couple of boilers.
Then
they used the steam to produce energy for their facility. So it was kind of a closed-loop system there. And then finally, we have agriculture. We have a lot of farming going on in our state, and we have some really excellent work going on with reducing energy waste in our farming community.
And it's important to note, and you mentioned it earlier, Mary, but the Governor's Energy Excellence Awards are part and parcel, a key component of his overall energy plan for the state. And this really emphasizes the conservation aspect of energy use.
It does. And it's something that's available to everyone. Everyone can take steps to reduce their energy waste. And it's really, really important because the cheapest and most effective energy that we can produce is the energy that we never use.
Absolutely. Mary, where can folks get the application information?
They can get the application information at myenergyexcellence.org. So myenergyexcellence.org. MI, you know, it's the abbreviation
Very
for Michigan.
Nice.
And if people have questions, they're welcome to call Michigan Saves.
Okay.
We are the chair of the steering committee that we have a number of organizations that are represented on the steering committee. And our phone number is 517-484-6474. So if people have questions or they're not sure of, you know, what the process is for either nominating themselves or at one of the eight categories, they're welcome to call us or go to myenergyexcellence.org. Also on that website, you can see pictures of all of the other finalists from the last 2 years. You can read about their stories. You can get inspired by them. There's a lot of good information out there.
And again, the deadline, though, is coming right up. So
it
people need to know that.
Right.
March 31st.
March 31st. That's right. So get your application in. Don't wait to the last minute if you can. Get it in. And one of the things that I think is really important to mention as well is if you nominate someone and that person is selected as a finalist, you get to attend the event along with the person that you nominated. So nominate your neighbors and your friends and your churches and the businesses that you attend, and you can attend the event as well.
Well, Russ and I are looking forward to attending it again this year. It's the Governor's Energy Excellence Awards. I've been talking with Mary Templeton. She's the Executive Director of Michigan Saves, and she's chair of the Governor's Energy Excellence Awards Steering Committee. Mary, great to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks for having us.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment inside MSU Today here on AM 870 WKAR. To read Kirk's blog and hear more Greening of the Great Lakes content, visit mlive.com/environment. I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes. Michigan State University alumnus Mark Schupan is CEO of Schupan & Sons. You may be most familiar with the company's Schupan Recycling Division, as their green recycling bins are prevalent at Spartan Athletics venues.
Well, our partnership with Michigan State is, in the beginning, we got pretty much involved in helping them to establish a greater recycling program, especially for during the game day, and as time went on, they've grown nicely, and for us it has been a true partnership. A lot of things that we do for schools around the state to promote recycling are more because it's the right thing to do. The economics sometimes aren't always there, but that part of our business has also grown greatly in the last few years.
While there are ups and downs in the commodities markets, Schupan believes recycling is important and the right thing to do.
Well, I feel fortunate that a large part of our business is in the recycling area because, you know, we have one planet here, and the idea, if we can recycle and we can do the best we can to make sure that instead of waste that we have new products to be made out of things, we're doing this. There's a saying that once we had some T-shirts, it's basically more or less the earth does not belong to us, we belong to earth. That's Chief Seattle, and I truly feel that. Well, there was another saying, and I'm not sure if I can remember, was basically is inherit the earth. We borrow it from our children. So we have to continue to do the right things.
Shoepan's recycling division may be the most visible part of the company, but there's a lot more to Shoepan and Sons.
We have our roots, which is the industrial recycling, where we handle close to 700 industrial plants. We handle their metal. We're aluminum specialists. We're in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan. We buy material from all over the country. Aluminum is really our specialty. We have that division with operations in Elkhart and a number of plants in Kalamazoo. Our distribution and manufacturing we have two plants in Ohio and one in Kalamazoo, and almost 30% of everything that we distribute, primarily aluminum plastics, is value-added. So we make some parts for medical, automotive, the office furniture, some pretty sophisticated things there. We are very much involved in the deposit environment for Michigan. We have two plants, and we have a pickup service for over 600 stores, and we are every day handling PET, aluminum, and glass. And so that keeps us busy. We also have, in the last few years, we bought an electronics recycling operation, which is growing by leaps and bounds. And I'm partners in a melting operation in Wabash, Indiana, for aluminum. So we got a lot of different things going on every day, that's for sure.
The challenges facing Shoepan and Sons?
Well, the challenges today is we're in a world market. What happens in China certainly affects us on a daily basis. The environment from a standpoint of the cost to do business today, the idea is how do you attract the best people? We have a saying, nobody ever washes a rental car. And what that means to us is we don't want one job at Shoepan and Sons that's a rental job. If people own their own jobs, they really do a good job taking care of them, and that's the environment that we wish to promote.
Giving back to the community is important to Mark Shoepan.
Well, one of the things I always talk about, I do get a chance to speak sometimes, is the difference between significance and success. And a lot of times success has been judged by what is your car, what is the size of your house, what is the your bank book that people think you have. Where significance is, does your life actually make a difference in the lives of others? And my mother used to say it's easier to give somebody the shirt off your back if you happen to have another one, but she also had a philosophy that if we were ever successful, or even reasonably successful, that we needed to give back to the communities. And so we have tried certainly to do that. People know actually the Big Brothers and Big Sisters in Kalamazoo is named after a son that we lost 13 years ago. And I've been involved with them for over 30 years. So, and there's just a number of things that we do in the community, and because we think it makes it a better place.
Mark Shoepan's advice for today's young people involves finding balance in your life and making sure you give as well as take.
Well, I guess my advice to people is to find something that you enjoy. There would be nothing worse is to go to a job day in and day out that you really do not like. Now, sometimes you have to pay your dues a little bit, but try to follow your interest and your dreams. Find companies to work for that absolutely do care about their people and that will help you grow. There has to be a balance in your life, and you also have to know that whatever you do, it's important not just to take, but to give back. And to be in an environment with companies that you feel good about that actually do help society, and it's just not a one-sided way of doing business.
There's more on Shoepan and Sons at Shoepan.com. That's S-C-H-U-P-A-N, Shoepan.com. I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes, WKAR. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear the show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.